Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
So, you'd like to believe in God, but... this isn't Bob Siegel. I'm sure everyone out there can tell.
Sharon, I'm sure everybody was fooled. You really had us going there.
Bob, the reason I'm starting today is because I'm humoring one of your avid listeners. And so without further ado...
not just a listener, an avid.
Yeah, that's one right.
One of my avid.
That's right.
Oh, what did this avid listener want
well,
you to...
well, this is for Jim. I hope you're listening, Jim. The world might be experiencing global warming, Bob, but... I get to co-host a radio show with a man whose brain neither freezes under pressure nor warms to cockamamie ideas posited by the liberal left. It's my pleasure to introduce your host and mine every Sunday from 3 to 4 on KCBQ, 1170 AM, Bob Siegel.
Now, Sharon, I'm trying to think of an appropriate response to that. Let me think.
It
was beautiful! You know, actually, I got to hand it to you, Sharon, because it's much easier for me to come up with these really nice things to say about you each week than it is to sit here and reverse.
I agree.
And I'm going, what? For doesn't freeze under what? What are they talking about? But anyway. Well, Jim, and I do know Jim. I know,
yes.
Well, she didn't give his name, but when she said Jim, I think I know which Jim she's talking about. Jim, Sharon got it out of her system, and the next time you have an idea for our show, why don't you just put it out in the pasture where it belongs? But you know what? That was fun. Actually, speaking of fun, Sharon, a couple of nights ago, we went to a concert that your husband Steve was doing. It was a jazz band from Grossmont. There weren't even that many people from Grossmont in the band, or let me put it this way, there were so many other people.
Right.
But what a hot jazz
hot,
band.
They were
playing at Dizzy's, and your husband plays a
mean saxophone.
I really had a good time with that.
Yeah, that was fun.
What was not as fun was the parking. You guys, remember you had told me about this great parking
garage.
And I drive in there, and the entire first floor is for handicap. Now, we have all accepted for years now that there are handicapped spaces. You drive,
right.
There's these two handicapped spaces. There's never a handicapped car in the space. Never.
Right.
But they're right up in the front. We've all accepted the obligatory two or three spaces. But to drive into a parking garage where there's like 30, 40, 50 spaces, not one of them is taken. I remember Jerry Seinfeld in one of his stand-up monologues one time said a handicapped space is like a mirage. It's like you're in the desert and you think you see water. He says you're in a hurry and you get in the parking lot and there's cars everywhere and then you look toward the front and there's a space right in the front and you don't know how you even miss it and it's a mirage, otherwise known as
a handicapped
space.
Spot.
Well, let me get to my first story for tonight because it's one of those features that let me put it this way. There's a Catholic school that got into some trouble. Happened was a teacher got pregnant, and she had signed an agreement before she even went to work there that there were certain morals, certain standards they had as Christians. Obviously, as Christians, we believe in the forgiveness of sin, but there was still a certain ideal they wanted their teachers to hold to.
Mm-hmm.
She agreed to this, and she did get fired when she told them that she was pregnant. She protested it. Sharon, guess who's coming to her defense? I'll give you three guesses, and the first two don't even count.
The ACLU.
The ACLU,
the
that's
ACLU.
Right. It's who else could it possibly be? Now, what else would the ACLU be doing? That's right. It's time for our ACLU update. Well, Sharon, I'm going to read a story that I got off the internet from TimeWarnerCableNews.com. Mm-hmm. Always want to list our source. I'm going to just read this in its exact entirety. It's not that long. The New York Civil Liberties Union, of course, let's see, I'm already adding, that is part of the ACLU, but it's a state branch. Mm-hmm, so,
right.
The New York Civil Liberties Union has filed an official complaint to the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission on behalf of a Queens teacher who says she was fired because she got pregnant out of wedlock. St. Rose of Lima School, boy, that makes me think of lima beans, but we digress.
Ooh, I love lima beans.
I hate lima beans, but our audience probably doesn't care whether we like them or not. St. Rose of Lima School terminated Michelle McClusker's contract last month after she had told school officials she was pregnant. The NYCLU, do we need to have now a new NYCLU update? Maybe we need sub-updates. Anyway, the NYCLU says McCluster was fired from the Rockaway Beach School despite praise from the principal for her teaching abilities and high degree of professionalism. The NYCLU is asking the school to adopt a non-discrimination policy. Now, here's a quote from McCluster. I also don't understand how a religion that prides itself on being forgiving and on valuing life should terminate me because I'm pregnant and choosing to have this baby, McCluster said at a press conference. Here we have a case, this is the ACLU talking now, New York version. Here we have a case of blatant pregnancy discrimination, which is both wrong and illegal, said the NYCLU's Donna Lieberman. The Brooklyn defense realized a statement that reads, or released a statement that reads, this is a difficult situation for every person involved, but the school had no choice but to follow the principles contained in the teacher's personal handbook. The handbook requires teachers to follow the teachings of Catholic faith by their words and actions. Okay, let me give a little disclaimer before I get into my main tirade here.
Go ahead.
If I had been running that school and a teacher got pregnant out of wedlock, even though as a Christian I don't believe in that, I do believe in such a thing as forgiveness.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Probably I would not have had a policy at my school. That's fine. But first of all, I'm not Catholic. I'm Protestant, even though I'm sure Catholics would disagree. But it's not the point. The point is, if this person, because of their religious convictions, felt that they should fire her, then that is their right to do so. So even though I may personally disagree with their decision, I want to defend their right to do it under our Constitution, because here we have the ACLU telling them that they can't. This is, on the part of the ACLU, such blatant, flaming hypocrisy. I am so tired of them. I thought, and we've been talking about this a lot on our show, and not just us, every talk radio show and news, especially around the Christmas season. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sharon. Doesn't the ACLU believe in separation between church and state?
Last I checked.
How come the separation never works the other way? Let me ask that question again.
In fact, that's the way it's supposed to work.
How come the separation never works the other way? If that phrase really means anything, it means that, yes, the church is not supposed to impose itself upon the state. It also means that the state does not impose itself upon the church. The ACLU doesn't seem to like the reverse side of the coin. A public school can't put up a manger scene around Christmas because it's supported by the tax dollars of the people, and some of them don't believe in mangers. Okay, fine. Fine, we won't make you look at the manger if it's going to give you a cardiac arrest. I suppose you could have just looked the other way for a moment while you were passing by, but if it's really going to freak you out, it's okay. Really, everything's going to be all right. And yet, at a private school, paid for not by taxes but by Catholic donors, they aren't free to practice their religion without the state interfering. They aren't free to ask their teachers to uphold their Catholic standards, even when the teacher signed a contract agreeing to that very such thing, agreeing that she could be fired, and now she acts shocked when they do it. I think the ACLU is smart enough to grasp the conflict of a two-edged sword that cuts both ways. That's why they try to make it sound like this isn't really a religious issue, and they come up with this cockamamie nonsense about how this is about discrimination against women because men can't get pregnant. So men can't find themselves in this predicament, as if the school would not have also fired a male teacher for getting a woman pregnant out of wedlock. Mm-hmm. You know, say what you want about the ACLU. They will never be accused of being stupid. Oh, don't misunderstand me. They may represent stupid ideas. They may tackle the cause of people so narcissistic they think they have a right to never be offended. If 99% of the people in America love Christmas, doesn't matter. I don't want to hear the word Christmas because it offends me. And that may be a mild form of insanity on the part of ACLU clients. But the ACLU itself is quite sane because they know just exactly what they're doing. They are attempting to eliminate Christianity. I can't put it any more simply and plainly. I hope you're all paying attention. They are attempting to eliminate Christianity. No, they're not going to line Christians up and shoot them. They don't need to with all this nonsense that's going on with activist judges. They don't need to. And they're not doing that to any other religion. Muslims talking openly about Ramadan is just fine, but let's not say Merry Christmas. Jewish menorahs are fine. The last time I checked, I never heard somebody from the ACLU request that we call them holiday menorahs instead of Hanukkah menorahs, but calling a Christmas tree a holiday tree is very appropriate and sensitive and inclusive, because one who doesn't like Christmas has a right to not be offended. And one who doesn't want to look at verses from the Psalms carved on viewpoint centers at the Grand Canyon has a right to not see those Psalms. But putting up the names of Native American gods right up on those same viewpoints, well, that's perfectly all right. In fact, if that offends you, there's something wrong with you. It means you don't like Native Americans. Honestly, this idea that the Constitution somehow grants us the right to not be offended, putting aside the fact that no such right exists in the Constitution, nobody, including the ACLU, really believes that that right exists anyway. I mean, not really. If somebody takes the Lord's name in vain in front of a Christian, and it's going to sound offensive to the Christian, does the Christian have a right to then sue them and take them to court because of violation between separation and church and state? Your stateness was getting in my face and taking my Lord in vain. And that's the least of it. Public schools teach secular humanism. They teach evolution. Individual teachers at colleges rip Christianity to shreds at every conceivable opportunity. If they don't want us talking about Christianity, if Jesus doesn't belong in the classroom, then maybe they should quit bringing it up, because somehow when they're putting it down, it's okay. But the minute we defend it, Jack, separation between church and state. Now, if this sounds like a double standard, you just aren't hip enough to understand the new rules of America. You see, the Constitution is actually a thing of the past. I mean, who are we kidding? It's a dinosaur. It's yesterday's newspapers. Time to usher in a brand new 21st century document. And I call this the new rules of America. Rule one, Christians can be accused of offending, but they can never claim to be offended. Rule two, Republicans can win the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives, but they have no right to use their majority power to vote for things Democrats don't like, because that is unfair to the Democrat minority. And you believe in helping those in the minority, don't you? However, and this is very important, when Democrats are in the majority, it is because it is the will of the people. Mm-hmm. The people have spoken, and the Republican minority should, well, it should just go away. Now, if you think that's inconsistent and partisan, then remember another new rule of America. Rule three, Democrats are never partisan. Get that? They're never partisan. Right. They're just Democrats. Mm-hmm. And America, incidentally, is just America, which leads to rule four. America is not allowed to do what other nations do. Other nations are allowed to have borders and to punish those who go across them illegally. But if America should punish illegal aliens, she would be racist. Other countries ask people to assimilate to their culture. If America should ask that, She'd be racist. Other countries are allowed to have a national language, but should America have one language like every single other country in the world, with the exception of Canada, but like it's just Canada, America would be racist. Other countries are allowed to put American down out of every other breath, out of every cup of coffee, over every French pastry. But should America say anything negative about any other nation? She's a racist. Oh, wait. The new constitution needs to have new amendments, and we only have one so far because amendments come in time. So here is the First Amendment. There is a qualification. If America wants to, there is one country America can put down. She can put down Israel. I guess that's okay because the whole world hates Israel anyway, and should America choose to do the same, that would mean that America's getting in step with the program, like those other fine pillars of virtue at the United Nations, and then America could show the kind of sophisticated attitude that France and Germany show when they turn their backs on burning synagogues. These are the new rules. But so far, it is not yet against the new rules to express yourself on talk radio, and we'll continue to express ourselves more when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
Hi, I'm Dr. Katie Rodan. Dr. Kathy Fields and I created Proactive Solution because acne is the number one problem we see in our practices. As dermatologists, we treat acne as a physical condition. But what really affected us was seeing the emotional toll acne takes. So maybe you're the one with the breakouts. You shy away from social situations. You avoid being photographed, or you won't leave the house without makeup. So what's preventing you from trying Proactiv? My guess is that you're afraid. You're afraid that it just won't work. Afraid to get your hopes up, only to be disappointed. This time you don't have to worry. We are so confident that Proactiv will work for you that I'm offering you a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactiv Solution.
To get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv Solution, just call 1-800-420-8744 and you'll become a believer. Call 1-800-420-8744. 1-800-420-8744. Call now.
You're unique. Sure, we may dress in similar clothes, drive to work in cars that look alike, and go home to houses that resemble others. But what makes you stand out from everyone else is your perspective, your opinion, your take on what everybody's talking about that we need to consider. If you enjoy expressing your opinion and learning what your neighbor thinks, then you found the place where it all happens. News Talk 1170 KCBQ. News Talk 1170 KCBQ.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel and Sharon Cashard. I would like to thank everybody who came out for the debate last week. I had a blast.
Great showing.
We had, close to 400 people. It was sponsored by Foothills. I would like to thank Foothills Christian Fellowship for sponsoring the debate. But all kinds of people came from other places outside of Foothills. And many of you came up and told me how much you're enjoying the show and listening every week. And thank you so much for that encouragement. We're sitting in this room in front of this tiny little microphone.
And is anybody listening?
It's fun. Well, and more people are listening than we think, but it's fun to meet the people. And thank you all of you for your encouragement. And those of you who don't like the show, I want to thank you for not going out of your way to tell me that you didn't like the show. So I thank you, silent ones, as well.
Bob, this week there was a decision made on the Swedish case with the pastor.
Oh, yeah, the pastor who was arrested.
For hate speech.
Yes, and I believe the verdict's going to surprise people. This is a very interesting story.
Yeah, it surprised me. This is from CitizenLink, and in a 5-0 decision, the Swedish Supreme Court acquitted Pastor Ake Greens on charges he committed a hate crime by preaching a sermon that condemned homosexuality. The court chose not to view his sermon as hate speech because the European Court for Human Rights would have likely overturned Green's decision. So even though the Swedish court could have held him criminally liable for hate speech. They knew that when it went to the European court, because they're all part of the European Union, right? That it wouldn't. It's like the Supreme Court,
right?
Yeah.
Supreme Court in Europe. So the court would have loved to have enforced it, but they didn't.
Yeah.
So this is saying something positive about the European Union.
Exactly.
I say that
but
with
not so
such
much
hesitation, but in this particular case, boy,
Green had called homosexuality a cancer on society. And the judge determined that there was nothing in Swedish law to bar his prosecution for the statement, but they also held that Swedish law has to correspond with the European Convention on Human Rights, which ultimately protected Green.
Well, I'm glad he was protected. As a Christian, I find myself shuddering a little bit that somebody would call homosexuality a cancer on society. I do think he had a right to say that according to the Bible, it's wrong. He had a right to use whatever colorful adjectives he wanted. In fact, legally, I wish he hadn't phrased it that way. But I'll tell you this, the kinds of courts that want to censor free speech and not allow people to really think for themselves, I think that's where the cancer of society is.
That's a good point. Green,
of course it was a good point.
Green was relieved, but this kind of saddened me. He said he does not intend to preach again on homosexuality.
I don't blame him. I mean, it is sad, but I don't blame him. Was it worth it to him? And it's what a shame. So now we have a pastor. What's he going to do? Get up and, hey, maybe he can get up and talk about tithing again. That'll make for a stimulating church service.
The article went on to say, to muzzle a preacher and mute a religious message simply because the expression is offensive to one, some, or many is a fundamental mistake concerning a fundamental right, as you just said, quoting from brief his organization filed with the Supreme Court. This was Leland reporting on the brief that he had filed. And let's see, one who is preaching about homosexual conduct, whether it be to his congregation or to others that are willing to listen, Leland said, could conceivably be found guilty under the hate crime statute of harassment by communication.
Yeah, well, they have hate crime legislation that's pending here in America, too. So we need to wake up, people, and get over this, I'm offended, therefore you don't
have
the
right. Well,
actually,
you know what? That's true, because in Pennsylvania, they amended their hate crime statute to include gender identity and sexual orientation.
We should never have hate crimes at all. If somebody is out vandalizing your house or killing somebody, the idea that they were hateful while they did it, it's just a way of slipping in that their motives and their thoughts and their speech are also criminal, and the day will come when they'll drop hate crime and it'll just be hate speech. And, of course, that's what they already have in Canada, and that's what was going on in Sweden. It was because, you know, this pastor didn't commit a crime. He said something.
Exactly. And the Swedish homosexual activists indicated that they may seek a tougher law in shutting down, quote, hate speech.
Yeah, well, this is not going to go away. But although it pains me to say it, kudos to the European Union.
Another free speech report that I would like to bring to our audience attention is this happened on a San Diego State campus, actually. Four religious organizations filed a lawsuit against the California State University system alleging that their First Amendment rights were under attack when they wouldn't allow the religious organizations to meet and have certain rules for the members of that organization. The university said it's discriminatory to meet and say non-Christians can't be in that meeting.
Yeah, this has been going on for a long time because I do a lot of campus ministry. And there are organizations like the ADF that we've had on who are saying that, you know, some of these rules about, well, you have to have a little clause in there that you don't discriminate, or if a non-Christian wants – this is insane. A non-Christian wants to come and be the president of the Christian club.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, that if somebody went into the Muslim club and said, I'm not a Muslim, but I have a right to run for – if a man went to the feminist club and wanted to head it, I mean, it would be – this is a joke. This is a joke. So thank goodness that Christians are fighting back. I mean, I don't like saying that because I don't like this us versus them mentality. As Christians, we're supposed to love people in the world. We're supposed to you know, not have these conditions that if they aren't Christians, they're somehow an inferior human being. Nobody feels that way, but we don't want to come across looking that way either. But We can't just roll over and play dead and let our liberties get taken away too. And
we've already done that.
Which we've done. The church has been a sleeping giant. The church worries more about who's coming to the Wednesday night potluck. And meanwhile, you have people in these dark dungeons saying, how can we take Christians' rights away?
In fact, O'Reilly the other night had on Alan Sears or Michael Johnson or somebody from ADF. And they were talking about our Christmas rights, you know, being taken away, stripped away one by one.
Yeah, and people go, oh, what's the big deal?
If just the pastors would unite and stand up and say no more,
and it doesn't,
it's a mighty force.
It doesn't matter. I mean, does it matter to my faith whether somebody calls something a Christmas tree? Does it matter to my faith whether there's a cross up on Mount Soledad? No, it doesn't, but that's only the beginning of the agenda. Read the literature of the people that want to take these things down. Mm-hmm. They believe Christianity is evil, and they erode it a little bit at a time. I know we go through this theme a lot on this show, but that's because we're hoping that people will start paying attention, and if we do our small part, and it sounds like people all over the country are starting to rise up, and they're just getting fed up with this. That 90% of us like Christmas, but the tail's going to wag the dog. All you need is one tail. This is algebra now. Follow the formula. Tail plus judicial activist judge equals tyranny or dictatorship or oligarchy or a lot of synonyms for that.
Mm-hmm. Bob, and finally, here's another freedom of speech lawsuit that is pending. Attorneys with the Alliance Defense Fund filed a federal civil rights lawsuit Wednesday against officials at University of Wisconsin for prohibiting residential assistants, RAs, from holding Bible studies in their dorms.
Wow. You've given us a trilogy of good news this week.
Sure. This is the last one. By forcing RAs to refrain from exercising their First Amendment rights, the University of Wisconsin is literally treating Christian students differently than other students. It's an incredibly broad restriction on RA speech and seems to have been applied solely to religious speech political correctness.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, we really should be thankful for groups like the ADF. I know a couple of weeks ago we had a member of the ADF on our show, and they really do a wonderful work. So Christians, when you're hearing about what you're not allowed to do, probably the person who's telling you this does not know what they're talking about.
Well, you know what? Even in this case, the RA was Steiger, and the first thing he did was contacted the Foundation for Individual Rights and Education, who wrote the university a letter, and nothing changed. Okay, but then he contacted ADF attorneys who filed suit, and the university temporarily suspended its policy, saying that a committee would study the matter. So there was some response to the ADF, and there was no response to this other route that Steiger was taking. Yeah. So,
I've always said my favorite verse in the Bible is, God so loved the world, he didn't send a committee. Well, we do like to defend Christianity a lot on this program, but we mean no disrespect to non-believers. As a matter of fact, we're going to have a very respectful dialogue going on with our friend Zach, who's back for the third week in a row.
Wonderful.
He is not a believer, but I have a great respect for him, and he will be on with us. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
You've got it. News Talk 1170 KCBQ.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. I go to peacecorps.gov.
Visit KCBQ.com today for special holiday discount offers from our advertisers. Explore the possibilities at Office Pavilion and get $50 off your next seating purchase. Receive a special offer from B&K Chem Dry, North County's finest upholstery and carpet cleaner, serving Carlsbad, Oceanside, Vista, and San Marcos. And no need to move out or remove plants, animals, or furniture to rid your home of termites. Receive $50 off on all work done by Ecola Termite Services. So visit KCBQ.com today.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. Sharon, it's really been a lot of fun interviewing Zach these last couple of weeks, our undergrad student from Central Washington University.
I've enjoyed listening, Bob. I can't wait for him to throw a question at you that really stumps you.
You know, it is fun because we normally don't have the same person on so many weeks in a row, but every time I talk to Zach, it sounds like we're right in the middle of something. We're going, come on again next week. Well, next week we have two other guests, so maybe 2 weeks from now he'll come on even again. But Zach, welcome back to our program.
Bob, thanks for having me back again.
Well, I'm having a lot of fun. I think probably our audience is enjoying it too. In fact,
yeah,
I have had some comments from some people who have expressed that they really appreciate hearing people who don't agree, but nevertheless can listen and talk respectfully. So
yeah, definitely, I'd agree with as well.
It speaks volumes. Well, what's on your mind today, my friend?
Well, I was thinking maybe an interesting topic to talk about would be, could skeptics believe in God?
Can skeptics believe? Oh, well, I would say the term skepticism is a relative word. If somebody asked me whether I believe in Santa Claus, I would, it's kind of the understatement of the century, I would say I'm very skeptical, although there was a real Saint Nicholas who did actually once exist and did some interesting things. But as a Christian, I hear Christians, there's this gospel called the prosperity gospel, that God wants us healthy, wealthy, and wise. Zach, that's something I would love to believe, but I really don't read that in the Bible anywhere. So on that particular theology, I would say I'm a skeptic. I wouldn't even say I'm a skeptic. On that one, I'd say I've come to the conclusion that that's not true. I might have been a skeptic when somebody first told me that, boy, anytime you want to get healed, God will heal you. I might have been skeptical, but then if, you know, you read a couple of scriptures, such as the Apostle Paul asking God three times to heal him, and God speaks to him and says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in your weakness. And then Paul says, all right, then I will glory in my infirmities that the power of God may rest upon you. So then I would go from skepticism to saying, no, biblically I've come to the conclusion that God does heal and can heal, but he heals when he wants. Anyway, I know you didn't call in to talk about healing, but that's an example. We can believe in God if somebody talks to me about another religion. It says, well, here's somebody else who claims to be God. Here's somebody else who claimed to be the Messiah. I'm very skeptical, but I'll listen long enough to see if perhaps the person they're talking about is also Jesus. Generally, it isn't, but anyway. So I would say they could. Now, what kind of ideas do you have in your mind? What spurred on a question like that?
Well, I was thinking, I had been reading some statistics, and empirically, it is very possible that skeptics can believe in God, because the reason I say this is... a couple of polls done with American scientists, 40% of American scientists do believe in God. So, and science is that is the skepticism. You must, as a scientist, you're either skeptical by nature or by trade, one of the two.
Yeah.
So, obviously, people that are skeptics do believe in God, and there's quite a bit of scientists.
That's true. In fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I believe this is a different poll than the one that you looked at, but there was a poll put out by... I think it was called Nature Magazine, a number of years ago.
7%, yes.
Yeah, and in that one, it was a slow percentage. And I had talked to an atheist who quoted that poll, but when I looked into the stats, I'm sure you're aware of this, Zach, that
yes,
polls are very dependent on the kinds of questions that are asked. They did not actually ask the scientists, Nature Magazine did not actually ask the scientists if they believed in some kind of supreme sentient entity who might be responsible for intelligent design. The way they phrased their question was, do you believe in a God who answers prayer and does miracles? Now, a lot of people have not witnessed miracles, and a lot of people, because of bad experiences with religion, it sounds like you didn't have a great experience with religion yourself growing up, or at least, I mean, I don't, you weren't traumatized or anything, but you had some very good, very basic questions that the closest people around you wouldn't even take the time to answer. So I, you know, I would call that technically a negative experience with religion. So you take that into the mix, and of course there might be scientists who have not experienced answers to prayer in their lives, but if you were to ask them, does it make sense that there might be some intelligent design? That would have been a whole different question. So it is interesting that different polls talking to scientists came out with different results.
Indeed. And the nature, also with the nature one, the people they had polled was the National Academy of Sciences, which is a very, very elite group of scientists.
Right.
You have to be voted in, and it's very, you have to do a certain amount of breakthrough research and stuff of that sort.
Absolutely.
A lot of the members have won Nobel Prizes.
Sure.
So the, I guess, not quality of the scientists, but the amount of accomplished in the science world is different with the Nature magazine than it is with just the other poll that I referred to.
You bet. And of course, there are still Nobel Prize laureates who do believe in God also, even the ones that weren't mentioned by Nature magazine. Yeah, I would say we're on the same page with this, Zach. I think any time anybody, whether they believe in God or not, is presented with new data or some new fascinating idea, they should respond to it with a degree of openness and also a healthy degree of skepticism. In other words, it's possible. I'm not convinced. And if it sounds ridiculous from the beginning, like if somebody says unicorns exist, I'm not going to respond with a whole lot of openness. I'm going to say I'm 99% skeptic and maybe 1% open if you want to invite me to the San Diego Zoo where you claim they just found a unicorn and I could visit the cage and touch the horn on his head and make sure there isn't scotch tape underneath and it isn't a zebra whose stripes have been painted over. I mean, I might look into it, but my initial response is going to be, no, probably unicorns don't exist, Jack.
Indeed. And what you seem to be saying is kind of what I'm hearing, you correct me if I'm wrong, there's kind of two quotes that skepticism really hangs on to, and you seem to kind of be showing those both in your little comment there, that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and also keep an open mind, but not so open that your brain falls out.
Yeah.
So there could be, like you said, maybe there is a unicorn. You'll check it out. You're open, but...
Well, now, I agree with most of what you said. I don't know that going to the San Diego Zoo and making sure the horn isn't taped on would count as extraordinary evidence. I want to talk about this extraordinary evidence idea.
Okay.
It'll be fun. Lots of fun. Zach, hold on with us over the break. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
Hi, it's Tony Griffin.
Oh, hi. Sorry to interrupt, but you've got to hear this. Now through Sunday night at El Cajon Ford, get into what you really want to drive and make no payments until March 2006. Now that'll brighten your Christmas. No payments for 90 days on approved credit and only at El Cajon Ford. We're talking all new Mustangs, Fusions, Explorers, and more. El Cajon Ford keeps it simple with big year-end discounts, new and used, buy or lease. Now back to Tony Gwynn in progress.
Gwynn, nobody beats El Cajon Ford.
This weekend, get a new 06 Escape with moonroof and V6 automatic with zero cash down. Nothing down, just $269 a month plus tax. Only $269 per month on a 24-month lease. 12,000 miles per year, 15 cents per mile with $14,355 residual. Five at this price of $24,750 on approved credit. And get this, take a big $3,000 discount on all 05 Mustangs. $7,000 off all remaining 05 F-150s with applied rebate. Big savings made simple. This weekend only at Broadway and Main, El Cajon Ford.
The Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation exists to provide financial support for children of Marines for their higher education. Special consideration is given to the children whose Marine parents have been killed or disabled, fighting for you and this country in the wars against terrorism. Help support us by contributing to these enduring values of education. Call 1-866-Iwo Jima for more information. That's 1-866-Iwo Jima for more information.
You've got it. News Talk 1170 KCBQ.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel and Sharon Couchard, and I'm joined by my friend Zach from Central Washington University. Okay, Zach, we were talking about extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Yes.
Now, this is brought up to me a lot. I don't believe you brought this up to me specifically regarding the resurrection, but this has come up a lot at debates and with other atheists that I've talked to. And here's why I'm not sure I entirely agree with that. The moment we say we're looking for extraordinary evidence, we would have to, A, ask what that means. If evidence is not objective, if we don't have the same standard of evidence for one claim that we would have for another claim, then it would seem that it would not be objective evidence. For example, if I was to say to somebody, there's historical evidence for the resurrection of Christ, the first thing they might say is, well, without a time machine, you don't know that Christ rose from the dead. And I could say, sure, but without a time machine, there are a lot of historical figures who started revolutions or gave speeches or ruled countries, and we're counting on eyewitnesses for them, too. And I feel that if the same amount of eyewitnesses and historians who claimed that Christ did miracles and rose from the dead were merely claiming that a man named Jesus gave a speech or started a movement, they would not accept it. And it seems that the bias of miracles immediately enters in. Now, that is understandable, of course, because we don't see miracles every day. But I'm wondering, a discussion about whether miracles are possible seems to belong in the realm of philosophy and science, where we could ask questions like, well, doesn't science show us that things that we once thought were impossible could be possible? But in the realm of history, it would seem that the only relevant question would be, do we have a lot of eyewitnesses claiming this? For example, to get back to the unicorn, sure, that sounds extraordinary, but if somebody claims the unicorn's at the zoo and I could go see for myself, or let's say it's at the Bonn Zoo in Germany, so I don't have the plane fare to get over and see for myself, okay, I would say it's not been proven to me yet. And if I were to read about the unicorn in the National Enquirer, of course, I'd have absolutely no reason to take it seriously. If I heard about it on CNN and ABC, well, with my view of those news organizations, I still wouldn't take it seriously. But if a plethora of different news organizations, some liberal, some conservative, some moderate and middle of the road, if different people from different walks of life, some of whom were presidents, some of whom were farmers, others who were educated people, all began claiming that they saw this unicorn, I might say, okay, before I heard this evidence, there was very little chance in my mind that I was ever going to encounter a unicorn. But the truth is, a lot of people are telling me that this unicorn exists, and I guess a unicorn isn't that far-fetched as a baboon anyway. It's just that we're used to baboons. Well, let me give you a chance to respond. So I'm saying I think we should have the same kind of evidence for all claims.
I can see your point with, like, the historical stuff. I don't know too much about the historical method for what it's, like, how you go about, like, figuring out what is accurate and whatnot. But it seems what you're saying, like, you know, with all these people claiming, that seems to me that would almost be extraordinary evidence that you have to have a lot of, you know, the experts of the field. Now, I don't know if I'd agree so much if there's just, like, reports from people and, you know, smart people and whatnot. There's stuff like that all the time, from everything from ESP and alien abductions to the little... No, I can't even remember what their names were.
Sure. You can have,
mutilate the cows,
right?
Stuff like that.
Yes.
And people see these all the time, but until we see, like, a body, and, you know, the zoologists and the biologists and whatnot to really study it, that I would be skeptical of that stuff.
Well, let's when we're looking at the resurrection, I think there's two criteria. Okay, so we have this claim that Jesus rose from the dead. Is it extraordinary in the sense that we don't see it happen every day? Sure. So we go back to our definitions of proof and evidence. And I know, Zach, that people attach different definitions to words. I'm defining, for the purposes of this conversation, proof as something repeatable, testable, observable, something I can experience for myself. And I'm talking about evidence as that which points to a high probability that a given claim is true. It's either rationally consistent in its philosophy, or we have the testimony of eyewitnesses. So you go with Jesus. We have a people who claimed that they saw him rise from the dead. We have historians who were not even Christians who verified that he did miracles, some of whom didn't like him, others who were very indifferent, but they still found the evidence overwhelming enough to report it. Does that prove that Jesus rose from the dead? Of course not. However, that does qualify as good evidence. And then if that evidence leads me to the eyewitness accounts of the Bible, which are not the only historical witnesses, but there's certainly some of them, I notice that in the Bible we have promises such as God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Then there's this promise that I could seek God out through prayer and actually encounter this Jesus Christ myself. And at that point, I would have the proof. So I would view evidence as something that brings us back to solid, even, level ground. In other words, when somebody says to me, I have not met God, I go, well, I can't do that part for you. That's totally between you and God. I can't look into your heart. Your search is your search. Your pilgrimage is your pilgrimage. It's between you and God. But if you've been led to believe that there's no evidence for God's existence, and you've been led to believe that seeking him in prayer would be a fundamental waste of time, then the evidence could be very significant, because I could show you a trail of breadcrumbs that God has left, and then you could follow the trail of breadcrumbs. In other words, you would start with the evidence and start and continue with the proof. Let me give you a chance to respond.
As for, like, I understand, like, the eyewitnesses and all that stuff. At least personally with me, I'm extremely skeptical of any sort of thing of that sort, just because I've heard so many stories before. There's a nice little story about in the book Demon Haunted World by Carl Sagan, in which a boy in America somehow ended up in Australia, and he had been in a car accident, and it was a motorcycle accident, actually, and he went into a coma or something of the sort. His blood pressure dropped, his heart rate dropped to almost zero. He woke back up with this kind of philosophical sense to him, and then started healing people and would go around and could show them. They would hook him up to these little blood pressure things, and he'd drop his heart rate right on stage and start healing people. And this is back in 1988, age of science, where were we accepting this stuff? And people believed it, and people, it was just throwing their money at him and stuff like that, and people, I'm sure, still believe that he healed them. In the end, it turned out to be a big prank by James Randi, the big debunker of everything, pseudoscience and whatnot, or paranormal stuff.
Right.
But people really, and I'm not trying to say that Jesus was a big prank or anything.
No, I understand.
But with that type of stuff, it just seems a willingness to believe and to accept uncritically at the time, and then when we have all these people working together thinking this big miracle and whatnot, ideas kind of seem to get fuzzy, and so that's why I get skeptical of stuff.
Zach, I just called you Jack.
It's all good.
Maybe your name will change to Jack someday, and it was a prophetic Freudian slip.
Yes.
No, I entirely understand your point. There's all kinds of malarkey out there. There are all kinds of charlatans. I used to be a big fan of Harry Houdini. I saw one of his movies when I was a kid, and my dad told me that he had once actually seen an act by the great Harry Houdini. Mm. And when I was in junior high, I bought his biography. I was fascinated by this guy who, of course, was doing tricks. He called them magic acts, but he was doing tricks. But Houdini got fascinated by the idea that maybe there was genuine supernatural. So when he heard about seances, he began to go and examine them to find out whether they were the real McCoy or not. And we'll talk about what Harry Houdini discovered when we return. Zach, stay with us over the line. My special guest today, Zach Kroeger from Central Washington University. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
Hey, got a minute? We're looking for that perfect addition for our advertising sales team here at KCBQ and KPRZ Radio. And we thought you might just be the one. You have an intense passion to make a nice living by selling long-term successful ad schedules to the many new and existing advertisers in San Diego. You're driven to get the job done. You love finding solutions for clients, and you enjoy being part of an incredibly energetic work environment. Oh yes, you have some radio sales or other similar experience. Rewards? great training, top commissions, a base salary, bonuses, and benefits. What more could you want? If the sales team here at KSBQ and KPRZ Radio sounds like something you'd like to be a part of, call the General Sales Manager today at 858-535-1210. That's 858-535-1210. We want to hear from you. 858-535-1210. Hurry, because this opening on the KSBQ KPRZ sales team won't last long. 858-535-1210. Call today.
Knowingly Here Weekend, host of Viewpoint San Diego, heard from 1 to 2 p.m. every Saturday on 1210 AM KPRZ, and at that same time on Sunday on News Talk 1170 KCBQ. Write down this number, give them a call, 1-800-4MY-SDBB. That number is to the traveling San Diego Blood Bank, and if they're coming to your area, well, you'll find out by calling that number, and you can help give the gift of life. 1-800-4MY-SDBB, or visit them online at www.sandiegobloodbank.org.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Myths, and I had mentioned that one of my heroes as a kid was Harry Houdini, who went and visited these different seances, and in every one that he visited, it turned out to be a fraud. They found tape recorders under rugs and sound effects and all these things, and yet Houdini died still believing in the occult, and he told his wife, Beth, if there's a way to come back, I'll come back. Now, he did not accomplish that. There was no resurrection. There is a story that his wife, Beth, did claim that she went to a seance and really contacted him. However, this is really not about Houdini. This is about me, one who was a fan of Houdini. When I was in high school, I was at a Wild Drama cast party, and I heard that upstairs some people were playing around with a Ouija board, and I went up there with some buddies to make fun of it. We began to see some things we couldn't explain. Eventually, we were all thrown out of the party, and we found ourselves at a park under the moonlight. It's a spooky movie-type atmosphere, and we continued getting together. Over the course of time, we were having seances and communicating with spirits, and people were getting possessed, claiming to be my sister, Jane, who had died in an automobile accident. This spirit was saying things about our family that only my brother and I knew, was saying things that nobody could possibly have known. And I became convinced that my sister Jane was alive out there. Now, to anybody listening, I want to be very careful because I'm not encouraging anybody to get involved with the occult. After I became a Christian, I became convinced that I did not actually talk to my sister Jane, but that I talked to a demonic presence who was impersonating her for the purpose of getting me obsessed in the occult and possibly demonically possessed. But none of that makes any difference to the fact that I experienced the supernatural as one who was very aware that most of the time when somebody claims to have the supernatural, it is phony baloney. It is, Zach, at the end of the day, what caused me to go from being an atheist to an agnostic, and I mentioned to you in one of our previous talks that I became the kind of agnostic who believed there was some kind of God, but I was agnostic as to who this God is. I certainly wouldn't have thought that it had anything to do with the Bible. At that point, I would have still said the Bible, Old and New Testament, was a bunch of baloney. And then a couple of years later, I encountered the spirit of Jesus Christ. So, but anyway, my point is, as one who appreciated the fact that there are people like Houdini that go out and expose the phoniness, I did experience something genuine. Even then, it was only genuine in the sense that it was a genuine supernatural experience. It was still deceptive because the spirit authors of that experience were impersonating people and weren't even who they claimed to be. So we went from phony people to phony spirits who were nevertheless exposing me to the supernatural. And what happened is I went home and I said, I guess there's some kind of God. I'll start praying to you. And every night for the rest of my life, before I went to bed, I made some dumb little prayer like, God bless my family and all the good people in this world. I wouldn't have known what else to say. But I didn't have a relationship with God. I didn't know who he was. Okay, let me give you a chance to respond to that.
Okay, let's go backtrack a little bit. I haven't heard the thing about the Houdini's wife. I know that every year during...
That's just an alleged claim, and I'm not hanging my hat on that.
Probably just a rumor thing. The reason I say that is there's every year on Houdini's, I think it's birthday or death day, I'm not exactly sure which one, some of the top magicians in the magic world get together, and they have a Houdini seance, and there's a secret word Houdini is supposed to do, or some action he's supposed to, that he promised he would do if the afterlife did exist. And they've been doing this for whatever, some dozens of years now, and nothing's ever happened, and I'm not surprised.
Oh, yeah, and I was just claiming that that was an alleged thing that his wife said. I'm not hanging my hat on that at all. My purpose in sharing that story is I was a great admirer of Houdini as a person who could show you how it was a trick, but who was open to a real supernatural, and then it was in my own experiences where I discovered the supernatural for myself. Now, obviously, a person would have to take me at my word. I don't expect you to listen to me say that and go, oh, okay, the supernatural exists because Bob said it does.
I'll explain how I kind of rationalize that in your mind. I'm not going to say that didn't happen because I wasn't there. But when I hear stuff like that, it was going to commercial. I'll have to explain it when we get back.
Okay, you're going to actually explain it on our next hour, Zach. We do have a second hour of the Bob Siegel Show coming up, 1210 on the dial, KPRZ, our sister station. So we will see you all at the other side of the dial, and Zach and I will continue our conversation of the supernatural and skepticism.